The reason I didn't give share because it was Tisha B'Av that was a nitcha, but nevertheless it was Tisha B'Av. Now the general rule is that let's say a shul for some reason didn't lain 1 week, so the next week they should lain both sedras. I'm not going to give two speeches. I'm not going to give two shiurim, but in order to follow the spirit of the halacha, I will try to pick a topic. And matter of fact, it's interesting that according to many poskim, when you have such a situation where you forgot to lay one sedra, so you laying the previous week's sedra and up till Shani in this week's sedra. So like it comes part and parcel of this week's sedra. So I was searching for a topic that incorporates that is in both sedras. So this way it'll be a share on this week's sedra and on last week's sedra. Now what you have is about Kriyashma, but in the mitzvah in Kriyashma, many mitzvahs are mentioned. The first parsha of Kriyashma, Shema Bahaya, Shema Yisrael, that is in last week's sedra. Bahaya im Shemoa, which is the second paragraph of Shema, is in this week's sedra. And contained in both is the mitzvah of tefillin. Now, there are many different opinions. Now, the tefillin contain the different parshios. Different parshios of the Torah, four different parshios of the Torah. And we'll get into it how we know there are four parshios, four different paragraphs or sections of the Torah. And there are different opinions in what order. What is famous is the opinion of Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam, but many people are not even aware that there are other opinions also. There is there's the opinion of the Gonim, which is the opposite Rashi, and the opinion of the Ravid, which is opposite Rabbeinu Tam, and there's the opinion that the Rambam held when he was younger, although in the Arach HaZach he doesn't have that explanation, and seems to have been the opinion of Rav Haigon that in the Tefillin Shel Rosh we do like Rabbeinu Tam, and Tefillin Shel Yad we do like Rashi. But whatever it is, but there are so many different opinions. But my original plan was to discuss the different opinions, but I see that would take too long. So I'm just going to focus on Rashi's opinion, which is the accepted halachic opinion. Many Hasidim wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin also on the basis of the Zohar, and there are those that and the Shulchan Aruch says that a Yerushimayim, one who fears heaven, should wear both Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. But the story is mentioned that Reb Chaim Volozhiner talked to the Vilna Gaon about it. And the Vilna Gaon's response was that if you would want to fulfill all the different opinions, you would have to wear 64 pairs of tefillin. So, and of course, no one is going to wear 64 pairs of tefillin, although that certainly would help the salaries of the sofrim, which in itself would be a good thing, but it would make everybody else poor. So the Reb Chaim Volozhiner, the Vilna Gaon advised Reb Chaim Volozhiner only to wear Rashi's tefillin because he felt that that was the correct order. Okay, in any case, the mitzvah tefillin is mentioned in this week's Sedra, because in this week's Sedra we had the parsha of Vahayim Shemoa, and in Vahayim Shemoa it says, you shall tie them on your hand, on your arm, I should say, really, as a sign in your arm, and it should be like a totafos. The simple explanation of totafos is like an ornament between your eyes. Now, it doesn't literally mean between your eyes. It's at the top of the head, just below the hairline. Of course, let's say in my case, it might be a little bit somewhere lower than that, because my hairline has somewhat moved over the years. But the mitzvah tefillin is contained in this week's sedra, and it's contained in last week's sedra. Now, what goes into the mitzvah tefillin? So in the tefillin, parshios, there are parshios, paragraphs of the Torah, are written on parchment, and they're put into tefillin, and they're written in the same way. They're written in the same way as they're written in the Torah. So because of that, it's parchment. It's very interesting, you know. Many, many years ago, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, this was right around the time of the Six-Day War, and there was at that time a great religious awakening. Somehow, I feel somewhat, you know, having seen that religious awakening, we sometimes see opportunities that were not fully used. Many, many people going to Israel because there was a big draw to Israel. People have told me that they sometimes, when they entering college or leaving college, they decided to travel the world. They went to India. They went all over. And among the nations that they visited, and that was a general spirit that existed during that period of time. More or less, you would have a picture of somebody with a bag on his back, with a couple sets of clothes, and just wandering from place to place and taking a plane from one country to another. People were searching, and they didn't know what they were searching for. And at that time, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was one of those. There were those that responded to this search by establishing special yeshivos, special schools of learning for those who did not have a religious background. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe responded with a tefillin campaign. And wherever you went, and this wasn't just limited to Israel, wherever you went, a Lubavitcher chassid would approach you and say, "Did you put tefillin on yet today?" And they would try to put tefillin. And of course, it wasn't just the idea of people putting on tefillin. It was a beginning. It was a creation of a certain relationship. And in many cases, that continued, where people became fully observant. And even people who didn't become observant, I know of a case of a person who had a high position in the Canadian government. And I was told that even though at a certain point he did not yet, had not yet become Shomer Shabbos or anything, but tefillin he started putting on every day. And with many people, that went further, that included many, many, many other forms of observance. And at that time, there were some who on a halachic grounds were opposed to what the Lubavitcher Rebbe, what the Lubavitcher Rebbe instituted. And they gave different reasons for it. One of those who was opposed was the Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin, Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner, who was a Rebbe of my father. And he, at that time, because he, when they were younger, him and the Lubavitcher Rebbe were close friends. So he raised a question to the Lubavitcher Rebbe about the tefillin campaign. And his feeling was, he wasn't against, from what I understand and from the letters that I read that were sent to each other, he wasn't opposed to the tefillin campaign per se, but he felt that it was important to emphasize to the person putting on tefillin that it's not just a box, a black box that they're putting on, but there are partios in the Torah. There are partios from the Torah, portions of the Torah that are in those boxes. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe thought, well, certainly that was the preferred way of performing the mitzvahs of tefillin, but sometimes you're not able to get, especially where you're putting tefillin on the multitudes of many people, so sometimes you're not able to give a whole speech about what's contained in the tefillin. So he felt that it was okay to just put the tefillin on without going into an explanation of what was contained in the tefillin. And there was a dispute, both of them, certainly L'shem Shemayim, and both of them were very interested in the Jewish people returning to tradition. And they were both, where they both unique is, they both had a good understanding of what was going on in the world. But the position of the Rav Kuttner was that the mitzvah is the mitzvah of putting the parshios on the person. Taking these paragraphs, these pieces of parchment that have paragraphs of the Torah written on them and wearing them. But there is a way to wear them. And tefillin is the designated way to wear them. But the mitzvah is a mitzvah of wearing the parshios. And consequently, Rav Kuttner felt that if a person wasn't aware that there are parshios of the Torah in the tefillin, since the essence of the mitzvah is wearing the parshios, wearing the parchment, wearing the parchment that has paragraphs of the Torah written on it, so he wouldn't be fulfilling the mitzvah because he isn't aware that he's doing the mitzvah. He just thinks that he's putting on a box. Whereas the Lubavitcher Rebbe's opinion was that the mitzvah is a mitzvah of putting on tefillin. We make a bracha, laniach tefillin. And the parshios is just in order that you should fulfill the mitzvah of tefillin. In order to fulfill the mitzvah of tefillin, there has to be parshios in the tefillin, he says. But a person doesn't have to know all the halachas, all the laws, all the prerequisites what makes tefillin kosher in order to fulfill the mitzvah. Of course, ideally a person should know, and ideally a person should know even what the topics are that are written in these paragraphs. But where that's not possible, where you're trying to get the multitudes to put on tefillin, especially by the Kotel, and it's not possible sometimes to go into a full explanation, so just putting on tefillin would suffice. This was the argument. But the question is, what is in the parshios of the tefillin? What is contained? What parshios are written down? So the Rashi, I'm going to discuss only Rashi's opinion today. Rashi's opinion is, well, the Gemara tells us there are four parshios. Kadesh. Now, Kadesh is at the end of Parshas Bo. There it talks about the mitzvah b'chor, but the focus of Kadesh is Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's the exodus of the Jewish people from Egypt. And immediately after that, the second parsha that is in the tefillin, Bahaya Kibiyacha, that also, that when you come to the land of Israel, a person has to remember the exodus from Egypt. So the first two parshios in the Torah that are going to be placed in the tefillin are parshios dealing with the exodus. But then there is Shema and Vahayim Shmoa, two other parshios. Now what is Shema? Shema is a mitzvah that, what is the parsha? Acceptance of the yoke of heaven. Acceptance of the mitzvahs. And to a large degree, the Vahayim Shemoa is also acceptance of the yoke of mitzvahs. But in the Vahayim Shemoa, there is a discussion about the reward and the punishment that one will receive for the observance of the mitzvahs, or that the Jewish people would receive for the observance of the mitzvahs. So in other words, we have four parshios, four paragraphs, four parchments of the Torah, of each one containing a couple lines of the Torah. The first two, I shouldn't even say the first two, two discuss the exodus from Egypt, the significance of remembering the exodus, Zikaron Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the last two discuss Kabbalas Malchus Shemayim, recognizing God as king, accepting his kingship over us, and accepting the laws that he ordained for us. So these are the four parshios now, and what's the reason? How are we to understand it? But the answer is because there is a connection between Yetzias Mitzrayim, between the Exodus and Kabbalas Malchus Shemayim, and accepting God as king, and accepting the yoke of heaven, and accepting his laws, accepting the laws of God. In a sense, the Mechilta tells us that's the way we recognize him as king. But the kingship, when it comes to Kabbalas Malchus Shemayim, is not the kingship of the Queen of England. It's not just a figurehead, but its kingship manifests itself in accepting the laws that are proclaimed by the king. Matter of fact, we have a general rule, Dina de Malchusa Dina, that we have to accept at least some of the laws of the country that we live in, because that's Malchus. Governments identified with kingship to a certain degree. So but let's say in Shema, so we accept the yoke of heaven. We say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and there's only one God, and then we go on and talk about our obligation in the mitzvahs of the Torah and accepting the yoke of heaven. So, and the same thing is true in V'hayim Shemoa, except there it talks also about reward and punishment as well. If you fulfill the mitzvahs. Now it's very interesting. The Rambam, in discussing the mitzvah of Shema, so there's a dispute. The question, there is an argument among the Rishonim. How much of the mitzvah of Shema is a mitzvah d'oraisa? Is a biblical mitzvah? According to Rashi, many say, there are those who offer a different interpretation of Rashi, but the simple explanation of Rashi is that Rashi's opinion is that the biblical mitzvah of Shema is just the first paragraph. Shema v'ahavta, until v'yisharecha. That's Rashi's opinion. The opinion of Rabbeinu Yonah is that midiraisa, on a biblical level, the mitzvah of Shema is the first two parshas. It's Shema v'hayim Shemoa. And Vayomer, while one is required to recite a parsha of that deals with the Exodus, and Vayomer deals with the Exodus. Man tizkor shyom seisam eretz Yisrael kol yemei chayecha. But according to Rabbeinu Yonah, on a biblical level, that's a separate mitzvah. On a biblical level, it's not part of the mitzvah kriyishma. On a rabbinic level, it was to be included in kriyishma. And we have to understand, why did the rabbis want that making mention of the Exodus should be part of the Shema? And now, because on a biblical level, you could say any pasuk, and there are Gemaras that seem to say that it doesn't even have to be pasukim, but that's a separate question. You could say any pasuk or any parsha that discusses the Exodus, even if you don't say it together with the Shema. But on a rabbinic level, it has to be reciting with the Shema. So on a rabbinic level, it's part of the Shema. Why should it be? Why did the rabbis insist that it should be part of the Shema? And then, the Rambam's opinion, there are all kinds of different approaches in the Rambam. The Shagas Aryeh says that according to Rashi, on a biblical level, all you need is the first parsha of Shema. However, my great-grandfather, Reb Chaim, he said that according to, and I think the Prima Gadam also says it, he says that according to the Rambam, all three parshios, Shema, V'hayim Shemoa, and Vayomer, are all midiraisa required as part of the mitzvah of Shema? Reb Chaim asked the question, and it's a famous question asked by many. Why is it the Rambam composed a book called the Sefer Mitzvahs, in which he delineates all 613 mitzvahs? And in that book, He lists the mitzvah of Schiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, the mitzvah of remembering and making mention and of discussing in detail the Exodus from Egypt the night of Pesach. But the question is, the Gemara in Brachas tells us, and the Mechilta has a different drasha, uses psukim to deduce that there is a mitzvah of Schiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, of making mention every day and every night about the exodus from Egypt. We say it always in the Haggadah. So there's a biblical mitzvah of reciting, making mention of the Exodus from Egypt every morning and every evening. So if it's a biblical mitzvah, why doesn't the Rambam include it? Why doesn't the Rambam include it as one of the 613 biblical mitzvahs? And there are many answers. Some say, because it's not explicit, it's only a drasha, whatever. But one of the answers Reb Chaim gave, was because the recitation about Yetzias Mitzrayim, about the Exodus of Egypt, is part of the mitzvah of Shema. Because the mitzvah of Shema is to recite all three parshios. The mitzvah of Shema is to recite all three parshios. That's the biblical mitzvah. And the expression of the Rambam says, the shlosha parshios elu al seder hazeh hein hanikra'in kriyashma. The three parshios in this order. Now that raises a certain difficulty with Reb Chaim, because b'di'evet, if you didn't put it in order, you still fulfill the mitzvah. But the Reb Chaim would say that midi'araisa should lechatchila be in this order. But you have to recite all three parshios. Shema, v'hayim shmo, and v'yomer. And what's the significance of v'yomer? Of course, parsha of tzitzis is mentioned there. Mitzvos are mentioned there. But more important is Yetzias Mitzrayim is mentioned there. How do we conclude the parsha Shema? Ani Hashem Elokeich Mesher Hotzeis Yeshem Eretz Mitzrayim Lios Lachem Be'elokim. Ani Hashem. So that according to the Rambam, mentioning a parsha of Yetzias Mitzrayim, of the Exodus, according to Reb Chaim's understanding of the Rambam, is part and parcel of the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. The only difference is, Reb Chaim said, that according to the first two parshios, you have to use specifically those two parshios. The other parshios, but when it comes to Yetzias Mitzrayim, making mention of the Exodus, you could use any parsha of the Torah on a biblical level. But the Chachamim, the sages, designated that particular parsha, as it's apparent from the Gemara, in Brachas. So Yetzias Mitzrayim is part. Why? Because knowledge of the Exodus, making mention of the Exodus, is part and parcel of Kabbalah on Malchus Shemayim. Now the question is, why is it that way? And I think the answer, first of all, we see the miracles that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did. We recognize God as King. Now, it's a little bit of a question, because on one hand, we very often talk about the Jewish people accepting God as King. And then we talk about Vahey Hashem Lamelech Al Kol Haaretz. Eventually, God will be King over the whole world. And then in Adon Olam, we say, Adon Olam Hashem Malach B'Terem Kol Yetzir Nivra. That God was King. God was King before anybody was created. But the answer is, the answer is God was King, but kingship, the kingship was not in its full force. A king only has full kingship when the people accept him, recognize him, accept his laws. So acceptance of God as king is necessary for him to have full kingship. And obviously the whole world does not yet recognize God as king. But the Jewish people recognize God as king, and we recognize the primary way of recognizing God as king is by accepting his laws. Now, and it was at Yetzias Mitzrayim, not only because of the fact that God took us out of Egypt to put us in his service, in a sense we could suggest that perhaps part of Shiva Mitzrayim, part of the enslavement in Egypt, was to understand the idea of being a servant, of being a slave. But Yetzias Mitzrayim took us out of the service, of Paro, to bring us in the service of God. We say, Ozin Sheshamal Har Sinai, Kili B'nei Yisrael Avadim, the ear that heard at Mount Sinai, the Jewish people are my servants. So, in a sense, the law, accepting the law of the Torah, that's how we demonstrate the kingship of God, to recognize the kingship of God, accept the kingship of God. So Hashem Molach, God was there as king, waiting for us to accept his kingship. And in a sense, this is also but to the degree that we're enslaved by others, that somewhat takes away. When we see ourselves as slaves of others, it somewhat takes away from our recognizing God, the total kingship of God over us. So Yetzias Mitzrayim, when we became free of Paro, We entered into the service of God, which to a certain degree was completed with Matan Torah, with the giving of the Torah. So, in a sense, the kingship of God emanates from the Exodus of Egypt, because so long as we were slaves of Paro, we could not be in this completely. In the service of God. As a matter of fact, how does God introduce himself to the Jewish people in Egypt? He introduces himself to the Jewish people in Egypt with the Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hoceicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim Beis Avadim. I'm the God who took you out. And then Lo Yielecha. So, and then we are given the mitzvos of the Torah, as the Mechilta tells us. So it's the exodus from Egypt that gives us the ability to accept the kingship of God. So therefore the speaking about Yetzias Mitzrayim, speaking about the exodus from Egypt, was part and parcel of Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim. It explains the Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim. Now, a matter of fact, it's interesting. The Gemara says there's a discussion in the Gemara, but the Gemara says you only need kavana, you only need focus of attention in the first pasuk of Shema. So the question is, okay, you could say the second parak. In other words, what is the first pasuk of Shema? It's Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim, accepting the yoke of heaven, recognizing God as king. That's the focus. But how is the Vayomer? How is the Yetzias Mitzrayim included in that? But the answer is the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the mention of the Exodus, that's also part of the Kabbalah of Malchus Shemayim, of accepting the yoke of heaven. And even according to those who say that the current Yetzias Mitzrayim on a biblical level, is a separate mitzvah. It's not part of Shema. But on a rabbinic level, it is part of Shema. Why was it included in the Shema? It was included in the Shema because that explains the Kabbalah Samach Shemayim. So therefore, it's included. Now, and it's very interesting. And I was always intrigued. In the Haggadah on Pesach, afterwards, there's a custom. We say a whole bunch of piyutim or songs after the Haggadah. So one of them is Adi B'mlucha, Kilo No, Kilo Ya, Adi B'mlucha, mighty in royalty. In other words, the idea is, after we talk about the Exodus from Egypt, after we talk about the Exodus from Egypt, we talk about God being royalty, being king, because that was the ultimate goal. That was the ultimate goal of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And we can say more than that. It's interesting that that's not part of the essence of the Haggadah itself. That's something we add later, because the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus, that was something that God did. Accepting God as king, that has to be something that we do. So after discussing the Exodus, so we say Adi B'mlucha, we talk about God's mightiness and royalty. We describe the royalty of God. We show that as a result of Yetzias Mitzrayim, as a result of the Exodus, God became our king. Now, but there is a certain strange thing. Rashi Shita, and that has to be understood. Rashi Shita is that the tefillin, in the tefillin, the first parsha is Kaddish, that speaks about the Exodus. The second parsha is V'haya K'biyacha, which also speaks about the Exodus. The third parsha is Shema, which is Kabbalah Malchus Shemayim, accepting the yoke of heaven, accepting the yoke of mitzvos. Recognize the oneness of God. And the fourth parsha is V'hayim Shemoa, which is a repeat of that same thing, of accepting the laws of God. And we explain it because there is a special relationship between the Exodus and the acceptance of the yoke of heaven. But there seems to be a big difference between the Shema on one hand and the tefillin on the other hand, in the Shema. So in the Shema, we have the Shema Yisrael. We start off with the Exodus, and then we say Shema B'hayim Shemoa. We talk first about the Exodus, and then we talk about the acceptance of the yoke of heaven, because we start off with Kadesh V'hayim Biyacha, which is the Exodus, and Shema V'hayim Shemoa, which is the acceptance of the yoke of heaven. And in Shema Yisrael, we do just the opposite. When it comes to the mitzvah of Shema, we start off with Shema, then we say V'hayim Shemoa, both which is the acceptance of the yoke of heaven, recognizing God as king. Now, it's true, it doesn't mention so much God as king, but the acceptance of the laws it is recognition of God as king. And then is then we have the Parsha Vayomer that talks about the Exodus. So the question is, why is it? Why is it that it's in that's in a different order? Now, I think it would seem that there's a difference between the Shema on one hand and the Vahaya and the Tefillin on the other hand, the mitzvah Shema on one hand and the mitzvah Tefillin on the other hand. The mitzvah of Tefillin places the Parshios in the order, places the Parshios in historical order. A matter of fact, the mitzvah Tefillin was given when the Jewish people left Egypt. According, there's a machlokas Rishonim. There's a dispute among the Rishonim. But according to some Rishonim, when the Jewish people left Egypt, so they were already given the mitzvah Tefillin. They only had two parshios, Kadesh and Bahayim Kimiyacha. They did not yet have the parsha of Shema and Bahayim Shemo in their Tefillin, according to some Rishonim. So the order of the parshios of Tefillin is an historical order. In other words, it tells us how we became the servants of God. How we came into the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Egypt and he took us from the service of Paro into his service. And when we remember, to a certain degree, the remembrance of Yetzias Mitzrayim is to bring about that goal. But we have to see it from a historical perspective. It's from a historical perspective. But in the Shema, we focus in final analysis. The whole purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the whole purpose of the Exodus, was for Kabbalas Malchus Shemayim. So in other words, the recitation of making mention of Yetzias Mitzrayim, That's to explain the foundation of Kabbalas Malchus Shemayim. But it's only mentioned as part and parcel of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Part and parcel of acceptance, the yoke of heaven. Now, I want to explain this a little bit more. It's very interesting. I mentioned already that Rashi says that the order of the parshios are Kadesh, Bahayik V'yacha, the two parshios that deal with the Exodus, that deal with our requirement to remember how God took us out of Egypt, how he freed us from the bondage of Egypt. And the second two parshios is about our requirement to accept the yokes of heaven, the yoke of heaven, and how we are accepting the yoke of heaven, and our recognition of God as being our God. So, but what's interesting is, now we know that in Hebrew, generally, we go from right to left. Right, what's on the right? That's first. And what's on the left is afterwards. So one would have expected that since Kadesh comes first and Vahaya V'yacha second, the Parshios should have been on the right side of the wearer. But Rashi says no. When we say it's in the order, that it's in the order of the Torah. Kadesh first, Bahayim Kibiyacha second, Shema third, Bahayim Shema fourth. It's in the order of the Torah because the Torah is putting it in a historical perspective. So it's not from the perspective of the wearer. It's from the perspective of the observer. From the person facing the one who is wearing tefillin. The question is, why should it be in the order of the person opposite the wearer of the tefillin, opposite the one who's wearing the tefillin? One would think logically, and this is the opinion of the Shemushi Rabba, but I'm not getting into that opinion. Logically, it should begin with the right side of the wearer. Why is it based on the right side of the observer? And now, then there's another question. Rashi, last week's Sedra, he would have said the same thing this week's Sedra, except since he mentioned the last week's Sedra, he doesn't have to mention it this week's Sedra. He asks, how do we know that there are four partios in the tefillin? How do we know there are four partios in the tefillin? He says, because it says totafos. And a very interesting, but a very strange Xeris HaKasid. It's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Rabbi Shmuel explains it differently. I have an explanation according to Rabbi Shmuel, but not right now. So he says, because the word totafos, which literally means an ornament. When it's talk about the tefillin of the head, it uses the word totafos. It should be an ornament between your eyes. So he says, tot, bekaspi, shnayim, fos, beafrika, shnayim. Tot, in the Caspian language, might be somewhere near, I don't know, just suggesting maybe it's near the Caspian Sea, that the word tot means two, and Caspi in the African language, I don't know what part of Africa, is also two. Now, 2 + 2 = 4. So the question is, The question is, what kind of strange thing is this? Like Xeris HaKasuv, that we have four partios, four paragraphs of the Torah in the tefillin, four batim in the tefillin, four separate sections in the tefillin of the head. Why? Because part of the word totafos comes from the Caspian language, means two, and fos means two in the African language. 2 + 2 = 4. We're using foreign languages to make it Russia. Very strange. Very strange. I remember when I was a boy, my father gave a chumash here. And he mentioned that question, and he mentioned an answer from the Shlach. I never saw it inside the Shlach, but I'm relying on what my father told me. And the Shlach says that actually the original language, or one of the original languages, was Hebrew. But then, at the time, one of the original languages, but then God created at the time of the Dor HaFlaga, of the generation that sinned against God, by building that tower in Babylonia, which was built as a monument to wage war against God, to show they're not scared of God. So God mixed up their languages and spread them through the face of the earth. So my father told me that the Shloss says these two words, pot and phos, were originally part of Hebrew. But then as a result of the mixed up languages, they went into other languages as well. So it's originally Hebrew languages. I can't say that I was happy with that answer. I want to suggest, and that doesn't contradict the answer of the Shloss, that there, perhaps it could be understood in another way. There is a pasuk. The Maran Bracha says, "V'ro'u kol ha'me'aretz ki shem Hashem nikra elecha v'yaru minecha v'mecha." Elu tefillin. Amar Rabbi Elazar Agadol. Elu tefillin sheparosh. All the nations of the world will see the name of God on you. Rabbi Elazar Gadol says that has reference to the tefillin of the head. And as a result of seeing the tefillin, or what the tefillin represents, they will come to fear you. They will come to fear you. Of course, that's only if the tefillin has an impact on us. If the tefillin doesn't have an impact on us, it's just something that the nations of the world will destroy. But the tefillin represents the impression and the impact that we have on the nations of the world. And specifically in regard to our identification with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, more than that, God's identification with us. So so in a sense, the purpose of the tefillin is, the tefillin represents the impact that the nations of the world have when they observe us. So the observer of tefillin, those who observe us putting on tefillin, are not just our fellow Jewish brothers and sisters, but it's also the nations of the world. And I think perhaps to emphasize that point, the Chazal used languages of other nations in regard to the of how the tefillin should be made. Totophos, tot, in the African language, is tot in the Caspian. The Caspian language is two. Phos in the African language is two. It's two plus two. So, in other words, it's based on the observer. And the truth is, for the Jewish people, true. When we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim, from the Exodus from Egypt, it has to lead us to the idea of the acceptance of the yoke of heaven. But as a general rule, we have to see Yetzias Mitzrayim, we have to see the Exodus as part and parcel of the acceptance of the yoke of heaven. See it as part, so therefore, in the Shema, which really has nothing to do with the nations of the world, and to a certain degree does not have to do with the observers who observe us. When we accept the yoke of heaven, we're accepting the yoke of heaven for ourselves. So it starts with Shema. Yetzias Mitzrayim just explains where that yoke of heaven explains where the yoke of heaven emanates from. So there, but in when we Pesach night, when we re-experience the Exodus, so in a sense, the yoke of heaven is part of the Exodus, because to a certain degree, we only become truly free when we accept the yoke of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We accept the mitzvos, because in order to be a free people, we needed our own culture. And our own culture, that's the Torah and the mitzvos. And it's only by acceptance of the yoke of heaven that we are truly free from all the other nations, from the yoke of all the other nations of the world. And I think that, so this is why in the tefillin, from the perspective of the observer, it starts with Yetzias Mitzrayim, because it's true. The nations of the world become influenced by our recognizing God as King. It's true, they do become influenced. But they only come to it by observing God in Jewish history. Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus from Egypt. That represents God in Jewish history. Yetzias Mitzrayim was an initiation of a relationship of God's involvement in Jewish history. And when the nations of the world see God's involvement in Jewish history, then they sometimes come to recognize, in a limited degree, God as King, as King of the world, in a very limited way. But for the nations of the world, it starts, even when they look at it, it starts with you. Historically, it happened to us that way. But when we look at it, Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus, has to be part of our Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim, acceptance of the yoke of heaven. But the nations of the world who observe us, they only after seeing God in Jewish history can they begin to comprehend the idea of Kabbalah Sol Malchus Shemayim, of accepting God as King of the whole world. Okay.
If anyone has questions, please put them in the chat. Yeah, I don't see any questions here. But are we supposed to try to influence the non-Jews, or it's only from them seeing the tefillin? I mean, I understand the lesson that...
There are areas where we can directly, and areas we certainly have to influence. But there are areas where we directly influence, and there are areas where they become influenced because of the way we act. And on the contrary, in those areas where they become influenced because of the way we act, if we try to influence them, it'll be counterproductive. So, in other words, there are areas that have to deal with, let's say, how to help people out, general areas. But when we deal with ritualistic areas, there we don't go out. We do not go out to teach people how to act. The Lubavitcher Rebbe suggested that there would be there is reason to go out to teach people to observe the Shiva Mitzvos B'nai Noach. Yes, but that's only in a limited way because it first of all will have a negative effect on us. And there are times when we have to inspire people through the way we act. I don't think the Lubavitcher Rebbe wanted people going around, having to push the Shiva Mitzvot B'nai Noah in the same manner he pushed the Mitzvot Tefillin for Jews.
Okay, so thank you, Meir Tishon. We'll see everyone next week. Have a Shavuot Tov, everyone.